The 4th District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Craig H. D. Armon presiding.
Morning, Council. We'll call 4-22-0405, People of the State of Illinois versus Bruce Melvin. Could Council for the appellant please state your name for the record?
This is Gregory Peterson of the Office of the State Appellate Defender for Bruce Melvin.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Could Council for the appellee please state your name for the record?
Thank you, Your Honor. David Robinson. For the people of the state of Illinois.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Mr. Peterson, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gregory Peterson of the Office of the State Appellate Defender. I'm here for Bruce Melvin. Mr. Melvin pleaded guilty to two crimes, and he was registered as a sex offender for two crimes. One of the crimes is not a sex offense, and the other one he did not do. We're asking for the court to void the conviction that he is factually innocent of, or in the alternative, withdraw the plea in its entirety. So before I delve into the specifics, I would like to clarify the organization and the interaction between the different sections of argument in my brief. Our first request is to leave the plea negotiation in place, except for the conviction that is void. We'd also like the sex offender registration to be corrected to reflect the law. And as a alternative option for this court, that is a fallback option for us to withdraw the plea entirely, largely due to the lack of factual basis for that conviction. So I'd like to begin with this issue of voidness. This court's decision in People versus White established what virtual presence means for sexual exploitation of a child. It does not mean text messaging. It does not mean still photos. That statute is drawn from what was originally meant to be an in-person, though not necessarily hands-on offense. It was, you had to commit the offense in the presence of a child. When they added—
Excuse me, good morning.
Good morning.
We have something more than that. We have a conversation during which these photos were transmitted. That's different than White, is it not?
It's different than White, Your Honor, but not in a way that matters. Why not? The clear intent of the legislature in this statute is to deal with the sending of live videos, live images. It's meant to simulate being in person, much like we're doing right now on Zoom. I think of an intermediate option would be, for instance, a telephone call that is closer to in-person, closer to presence, similar to what the Second District Appellate Court briefly did for oral arguments. This on Zoom is significantly more representative of what would happen if I was before you in person right now. So while the text messages going back and forth at the time the pictures are sent, that is a level of timing of immediacy that's not present in White. It's not a level of presence that's not available in White. Imagine if the conversation had suddenly stopped. It would have the feeling of texting someone and they've stopped texting you. They must have been called away, as opposed to if someone that you're speaking to in person suddenly leaves mid-conversation without warning.
But we don't know from this record that it stopped. I mean, we have a limited record. This was a plea situation, right?
This was a plea situation, but the facts below are not in dispute at any point. The state's attorney's statement after the plea, the factual basis that was proffered, it all lines up with each other. We have a text message based conversation and the sending of four still photos from Mr. Melvin to these two, potentially three police officers. That's all we have here.
Mr. Peterson, may I inquire? You say that's all we have, and that kind of is the point. We don't have the kind of record that we had in White. And you're asking us to make a determination, a legal determination, based on a very limited record, which constitutes just a bare bones factual basis and a stipulation by counsel that the state was capable of establishing the elements of the offenses for which the defendant was charged. The defendant then enters a knowing intelligent, and voluntary plea acknowledging that he is guilty of each of those two offenses. That's significantly different than the situation in White, where the state presented all the evidence they had, and what it consisted of was some still photographs, no conversation, no interaction between the two parties. And in fact, although we didn't reach it, I think it was referenced in my special concurrence, even the pleading, even the document itself, the charging document, was defective. Here, you don't question the legality or propriety of the document itself. The charges themselves were properly alleged. You're just saying that the factual basis wasn't sufficient, and you're using White, actually, you're using the obiter dicta of White as justification for that conclusion, aren't you?
No, Your Honor. Everything in this record indicates that there was no video at any point. If there was,
so you're saying that with absent video, there is no crime.
This crime, yes, Your Honor. I would be comfortable drawing that as a bright line.
Okay.
Because that's what this crime is meant for. This sexual exploitation of a child is meant for in the presence of a child or in the virtual presence of a child. And there are other crimes that could have been charged here. And I don't want to speculate about the sufficiency of the evidence on that point, but I would say there are certainly other situations that could apply here. But still photos, text conversation, and there's not only no indication of video, but I think it's a reasonable assumption that if there had been any videos sent, the state would have mentioned that. That would have been a hugely incriminating fact. We don't have
around. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Aaron.
How do you get around the definition of webcam, including means of video capturing device connected to a computer or computer network that is designed to take digital photographs or live or recorded video, which allows for the live transmission to an end user over the internet? Aren't digital photographs included within that definition?
Within the definition of webcam, Your Honor, yes, right? But not within the definition of virtual presence.
Well, all it says in virtual presence is an environment created with software and presented to the user and or receiver via the internet, which is what we have here, right?
Yes.
Okay. In such a way that the user appears in front of the receiver on the computer monitor or screen or handheld portable electronic device, which your client did, usually through a webcamming program. Not exclusively, usually through a webcamming program. Virtual presence includes, but it doesn't say that it's limited to, primarily experiencing through sight or sound or both, a video image that can be explored interactively at a personal computer or handheld communication device or both. But then you have that troubling language in the webcam definition, which includes digital photographs. So how is it that you exclude the transmission of digital photographs from the definition of virtual presence in this instance?
I do that under White, Your Honor. Snapchat can also take video.
That's the point. It didn't, and all they had were a series of photographs sent cold, no conversation before or after. And the conclusion, I think, was proper. The question is, maybe we went a little too far in providing explanations or examples. And if so, then as obiter dicta, is that necessarily going to be controlling in any other case?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I would say there was a conversation happening before in White as well, although not sexual in nature. White says that Snapchat was the primary means of communication between this coach and the track team.
But no conversations during, before, or after these photographs. Yeah, they use that media to converse, but that wasn't going on at the time those photographs were sent.
Yes, Your Honor, I simply mean that it was not an out of the blue text message to a stranger. Miss White knew the victim.
Sure.
But I would say that the fact that the same device could take photographs or video does not mean that any photograph taken on such a device transports you to the virtual presence. I think the vast majority of photos that are taken these days, except for those that are taken on physical cameras, are taken on devices that could also take video. Sending one of those in a one-off situation does not put you in a virtual presence of someone, and sending them in the middle of a text-based conversation doesn't either.
Well, but we don't know. That's the problem with the inadequacy of the record we have. We don't know whether in the midst of the text conversation, he says, and I'm sending you a picture of me right now. And so he begins interspersing his conversation with this, what he believes to be a 16-year-old girl, with still digital photographs of him at that time, in that moment in time, during the conversation, and that they discuss what's in the photographs, or there's conversation about the photographs, so that he is in fact in her virtual presence in a digital still format as opposed to video, but it is an ongoing conversation. We have no idea whether it's that or whether it's just pictures that he had in a file somewhere and he intersperses them in his conversation with her. But we don't have a record that tells us what that is. What we do have is the state indicating in their factual basis that they have all of the elements of each of the offenses, and your client then admitting that, yes, he's guilty of both of those offenses, and counsel stipulating that we would stipulate that if this case were to proceed to trial, the state would be able to produce witnesses and evidence to substantially support the allegations, meaning the charges.
That's right, Your Honor. And that's why we're saying that's ineffective assistance. She had the statute wrong, and White was out there for her to read. She could have read your special concurrence in White that specifically said live images in person or through video.
Well, then we get to the question of whether, even if that were error, does it constitute plain error?
Yes, Your Honor, it does. It's second prong plain error. I think the best route to find that would probably be through People versus McCarty.
Well, McCarty had both a defective charging instrument and a defective factual basis. Have you looked at People versus Shanks?
And I've not, Your Honor.
Okay. 2022 Elap 4th 210656. We talk about the sufficiency of a factual basis. In that particular case, we're talking about a factual basis in a petition to revoke probation, but we point out that the law is the same with regard to factual bases for petitions to revoke as it is for the original charge. And we found in that case that even though it might be error to permit the stipulation to serve as a factual basis for the defendant's guilty plea, that doesn't constitute plain error. We find that if the defendant feels that a factual basis for his plea is lacking, that the trial court is the place to raise that contention. Defense counsel in that case stated that she believed the state could put on sufficient evidence to carry its burden, essentially stipulating the factual basis, almost exactly what counsel did in this case. And we found in Shanks that, all right, it might be error, but it doesn't constitute plain error.
Well, with your permission, Your Honor, obviously I'm not at present moment familiar with the details of Shanks, but I would say even if it's not plain error, it's ineffective assistance of counsel.
Okay.
That to the degree it wasn't raised before trial court, it was due to counsel's misunderstanding of the elements of the crime. And we also see that.
Or counsel's knowledge that his client wants to take advantage of a good deal that's going to basically absorb this case into a 10-year sentence he's already going to have to serve anyway, so that he effectively serves nothing on this case.
There I disagree, Your Honor, because Ms. Metoyer didn't simply... She affirmatively represented to the court that the evidence was sufficient to meet the elements of both charges.
And you'd agree, wouldn't you, that your client throughout the case was pretty good at making it clear when he didn't agree or like something that was going on. I mean, he was pretty quick to vocalize any objections or concerns that he had at any point in time, wasn't he?
Yes, Your Honor. And
so the absence of that, can't we take into account the fact that in spite of his willingness to voice his objection at any stage of the proceedings when he doesn't agree with something that's going on, his failure to do so when specifically asked about the performance of his counsel at the time of the plea, and his failure to raise that issue at any time, would be an indication that perhaps he wanted this plea to go through because he knew it was going to get absorbed into his 10-year sentence in the other case with an 18-month MSR, which in fact would be the controlling MSR on in a consecutive sentence. So he was getting a plea in this case with basically nothing.
I disagree, Your Honor. And it's based on the fact that, for one thing, his attorney would have told him that what he had done satisfied the elements of the crime. And Mr. Melvin's not a lawyer. That was his attorney's advice that he was taking.
Mr. Melvin wasn't reluctant to represent himself when he chose to do so from time to time, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. He was represented by counsel here. And the sure. other thing I would point out here is that the prison sentence, the jail sentence that Mr. Melvin was receiving here wasn't the only consequence. It was sex offender registration. And if Mr. Melvin had known that a crime that he did not commit was the only reason that he was ending up on the sex offender registry, I think it's fair to say on this record that he would have spoken up. But his counsel specifically tells him and tells the court.
Actually, they said that they both apply.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not like he didn't already have in his mind the realization that he might get dinged for sex offender registration because they're telling him they both apply.
They're telling him they both apply, but that's right. Two errors, not zero errors. The one that he did should not have been
question, sex. I'm sorry, I apologize. The point of the question wasn't whether they were error or not. The point of the question was what effect that had on the state of mind of the defendant at the time of the plea. He was aware, at least his thinking at that point in time was that he was going to have to register as a sex offender no matter what.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's because his attorney gave him two pieces of faulty information. If Mr. Melvin had known there's no way on the facts that the state has charged you with, and also Mr. Melvin knows what happened on the, I think, night in question, it may have been the day, but if he knows what happens and if competent counsel had told him, this, they cannot possibly get a conviction on this, and the other one's not a sex offense, I think it's fair to assume here that he would have accepted even a larger sentence to avoid the registration.
But we don't even know what all the evidence was. See, it's not like all the evidence was out there and the lawyer is saying they can't convict you of this. We don't know that.
Your Honor, there's absolutely no dispute on this record that there was no video sent, that there was no live image sent.
And I'm sorry, I apologize. I keep forgetting that you're limiting the offense to only video images. I'm sorry.
I'm limiting it, Your Honor, to live images or video in the virtual presence sense. And I think that follows both from the majority opinion in White, but also especially your special concurrence.
And I apologize, I've taken up so much of your time asking the questions. Please go ahead.
Counsel, I have a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the factual basis that the state gave indicate that defendant was in the virtual presence of the child or the person who he thought was a child?
Are you saying did they specifically?
I'm saying, does the factual basis use the phrase virtual presence?
No, Your Honor.
Does that matter?
I think it would not matter given the very state-friendly standard review for a factual basis challenge. If there were facts anywhere in this record from which this court could consider that element was met, that would be one thing. But what we have here is nothing in the entire record that meets virtual presence, and no bare allegation of virtual presence that the defendant stipulated to. And I think that does matter. And I do agree with Justice DeArmond's statement that the error about the MSR is no longer a controlling error here. At the time we briefed this case, his other appeal was still pending. But the problem here is the factual basis. The problem is that this was a plea deal done altogether where what I at least consider to be the most serious consequence, admittedly a collateral consequence of this plea, the sex offender registration, simply should not have been there. Mr. Melvin was not charged with a sex offense that he committed. So we would ask that you void the void conviction or in the alternative, allow him to withdraw his plea. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. You will get an opportunity on rebuttal. Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor's defendant is asking this court to address a series, although a limited series, of very important questions. Having failed to preserve a single one of them at his motion to withdraw a plea hearing, a single one of them. Had defendant bothered to do this, the state could have made a record potentially connecting these digital dots, which the state believes is an important aspect of White. Now, keep in mind, as this court has, I think, pointed out and stolen a little bit of the thunder here with the questioning, is that White emanated from a bench trial where evidence was presented. In fact, a significant amount of evidence in that case, I think, was presented to my recollection that may not have even necessarily been presented in front of a jury because it was a bench trial. So the record was very fruitful about what the facts were in that case and what the limits were here. What we have here.
Excuse me, may I interrupt for just a minute, though, while you're talking about this. Weren't the photos that were sent here sent via text messaging? And they were still photos, correct?
No. They were still photos, but they were not sent via text message. Defendant represents that they were sent via text message. They were not. They were sent by a mode referred to as Facebook Messenger.
Go ahead. How is that different?
It's similar to text messaging, but interestingly, and again, this is why having a record of something like this, if you had a pretrial motion on it or had some argument about it below at the motion withdrawal plea, would be important because we could have presented evidence to the effect that Facebook Messenger is more of a virtual reality format than typical telephone texting is, if that makes sense.
Say that one more time. Right. I was just going to say that one more time because I think this is an important point and I would like to understand it also.
It's a vital point. And this is why I believe forfeiture is so important here. Had this been presented below, the state would have had an opportunity to present evidence that Facebook Messenger is more of a virtual reality format, than simple text messaging from your phone, which is how the defendant would like this to be described.
So how is it? I apologize. I am not technologically savvy. I know some things, but this is very important to this case.
So I can just tell you my experience because, again, the record's completely devoid of this because the state was robbed of the opportunity to present any evidence on this. However, my personal experience is that direct messaging, especially the way that my daughter engages in it, is that you go back and forth with someone more directly and more interactively than you would in a typical text messaging. So when my wife text messages me on the phone, maybe she sends a couple of pictures of things from the pantry that she needs for me to pick up on the way home from work. I may not get that text message until we get finished with the oral argument. But when my daughter, for example, is direct messaging her friends in a format or on a platform like Facebook or Instagram, that can be and often is a more interactive form. The whole point is they want it to be a virtual interaction. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily what happened here or what applications on that platform were applied, because again, our whole point is, as Justice DeArmond has pointed out, as Justice Zinoff has pointed out, the state was robbed of that opportunity because when this appellant brief was filed in this case, it's the first time anyone had ever heard this argument. So this goes back to the point about the definition of a webcam and whether still photographs, taking that phrase in a vacuum, could constitute part of a virtual presence. The answer is they absolutely can. All a video is a digital format of strung together still photographs. So, and again, these are all the things that could have been presented had the defendant bothered to argue any of these issues below. We could have presented evidence about how digital formatting works differently from Polaroid photographs, which are referenced in the White case. These are all issues. This is a very significant and important issue that, again, was not preserved. The state was totally robbed of an opportunity to make its argument. And I'm expressing to this court now a firm belief that it is not simply limited to Zoom type in interactions. Is that the easiest example? Yes. But that's not a floor. Zoom is a ceiling. I mean, obviously, the most direct form of virtual presence is Zoom. We're in the most direct form of virtual presence now. But I suspect that we could bring someone who's sharp as an expert on these issues to talk about virtual reality and what virtual presence can mean in different forms. The kids in my neighborhood play this game called Roblox, where they're in a virtual interaction, and it's in space and time, but rather than being depictions of themselves, they're different characters. Does that make it less of a virtual presence? They can communicate with each other. They can interact with each other. I don't know the answer to that, but what I do know is this record is completely devoid of the opportunity for the court, or more importantly, for the state, or more importantly, the court, to be able to make a determination about an important issue like this.
Mr. Robinson,
why couldn't the state have put that in their factual basis? You say robbed of the opportunity. Well, who robbed them?
The defendant.
Well, Mr. Robinson, let me ask a question.
Did the defendant tell you what to put into the factual basis?
No, but what I mean by that, and I don't mean to be flippant, Your Honor, but what I guess my point is, when you're taking a factual basis, just the reality of it, when you're taking a factual basis, as you know, for a defendant who's already spending a decade in Department of Corrections on these crimes, given the totality of circumstance and the context, you're presenting a sufficient factual basis for the court. If the defendant's going to adopt it, we've presented a sufficient factual basis. Could we, in retrospect, have included a lot of additional information using the phrase virtual presence? Probably. But what I can say is it's a factual basis, not a legal basis. And we presented a factual basis. The defendant agreed to it. There was no surprise there. He understood what he was pleading guilty to.
Mr. Robinson, the first sentence of the factual basis says, on March 10th of 2021, this defendant was privately messaging a Facebook page titled Britt May. Doesn't that in and of itself, by implication, indicate that it's Facebook messaging?
It is, and I don't think there's a dispute about whether it is Facebook messaging. I think the defendant used the terminology texting here because it was, I guess the court would have to ask the defense why they used that. But yes, I mean, this was a Facebook interaction. It is literally a virtual platform. That's what Facebook is. That's what Instagram is. And if there's any surprise about that, this should be viewed in the light most favorable to the state. I mean, that's why we were heavy on the broad standards of review, because this feels like a case challenging the sufficiency of the state's evidence in the defendant's brief, which is completely unfair to the state. This is an appeal from a challenge or a motion to withdraw a guilty plea where none of these claims were ever made.
Counsel, I don't do Facebook and I never will. I don't even understand it. But isn't there something called FaceTime? And aren't you confusing Facebook messaging with FaceTime in your argument? It seems like to me you are, from what my limited knowledge is.
I know it would seem that way, Judge, but I can assure you I'm not confusing FaceTime with Facebook and Instagram. So Facebook is a platform. It's
talking about Facebook messaging.
Correct. And that's run by Facebook, which is run by a company called Meta that also runs Instagram. They have different interactions on that platform, all the way from photographs to what they refer to as reels. They also have real-time interactions. FaceTime, Judge, I think is what you're referring to. I think it's like an Apple product. It's on your phone. So it's like a face. It's like a Zoom type one-on-one interaction discussion between two individuals. It's like a phone call with a webcam, basically.
Which, to me, that clearly then would be virtual presence, wouldn't it?
100%. 100%. Again, our argument is that that's a ceiling, not a floor. That's the easiest. I mean, obviously, if he was FaceTiming a police officer in this case, dressed up as a 16-year-old girl, sending these photographs by virtual presence, even if they were Polaroids and he was holding them up while he was on a FaceTime interaction, that would clearly be virtual presence. Again, the state's position is that's a ceiling, not a floor, and that there are interactions below that most obvious type that the General Assembly intended to be covered by the statute. And again, I hate to sound like a broken record here, but had any of this been addressed below, the state could have taken the opportunity to bring in evidence to help educate the parties and the court about what this interaction was, what platform they were on, how the police utilized the platform. We have none of that on this record. And so I would just remind the court again, People versus White dealt with a situation arising from a bench trial. Here, we're simply dealing with an appeal from the denial of a motion to withdraw a plea where none of these things were argued. I'll also point out, you know, Justice Turner, you made a note about the factual basis, and I think over time, I've come to understand the appellant's opening argument to feel more to the state like a combination of an attack on the factual basis and a flat-out challenge to the sufficiency of evidence. I think the sufficiency of the evidence question is an easy one to answer. This is not the appropriate form for that challenge. As to the factual basis, I would simply say that it's a very low threshold. And I think Justice DeArmond pointed out the Shanks case, but there's a number of cases in that line that talk about factual bases. And the fact that, as I said before, it's a factual basis. It's not a legal basis combined with the facts and intertwined with the facts of the case. Basically, we're asking, as this court well knows, we're asking the defendant, if we presented this material, do you agree that we would be able to prove it? It's just one of those safeguards that's institutional and important in our system of criminal justice to make sure that defendants.
Mr. Robinson, that argument, and I might just agree with it. I haven't really decided yet. Seems to be one or akin to invited error or acquiescence. But is there a distinction there?
Well,
arguing and acquiescence or invited error,
it is, and I can tell you, and we made note of this in our brief, Your Honor. We are sympathetic to the argument that a defendant can never and should never be permitted to plead guilty to a crime that is not a crime. That's fundamental to our system of criminal justice, and we would not stand behind that. That is not what happened here. The defendant in this case is parlaying an argument related to a factual basis into a challenge to the construction of a statute vis-a-vis an application of the facts of this case. Now, if that sounds complicated, that's because that's where we're at. He pled guilty to these crimes knowing that the state had a particular set of evidence, and he agreed. He said, yes, you could prove me guilty based on the evidence you have. Now, do we know all the evidence the state has? Not even close. We know what we include in the factual basis, which is the basement bottom floor, as is in most cases, what the state would be prepared to prove at trial. But all of the evidence related to the most important issue in this case, amounts to a virtual presence. I'm sorry, Judge.
Is your argument then that the factual basis does demonstrate virtual presence? The factual basis given?
Yes. But I hesitate because I want to be clear, because the factual basis is not presented to prove a particular single element. It's presented to show what the state would prove, what the state would present to prove the crime was committed, which includes elements, as in this case, virtual presence. I know that sounds convoluted, but I just want to be clear. We didn't put on the factual basis to show there was a virtual presence because, in large part, no one brought this up. So ironically, I think defense counsel has inadvertently stumbled on a key point when he said that he thinks other crimes could have been charged. Right. Well, the key point here is other crimes could have been charged. And part of the reason they weren't is that, and we don't know this for sure, but there are plea negotiations going on behind the scenes. There are crimes that we present and charge and ultimately get pled based on the totality of circumstances. In this case, including the fact, again, I can't emphasize this enough, defendant was spending a decade in prison already. This was going to be a concurrent sentence. And so these are all things that are considered. And a defendant saying, hey, defense attorney, frankly, coming to the state and saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't think you could prove virtual presence for this misdemeanor and low-level felony. Why don't you go back to the drawing board and come up with a better felony? Is insanity. No defense attorney would ever do that. And I don't know that's what happened here, but I suspect it probably is something akin to that happened. But again, we don't know that because the record is completely devoid of it. And if he's got a challenge that his counsel was ineffective, this is the type of challenge that could only be resolved through a collateral attack, calling the defense attorney at a third stage hearing and saying, how did this come about? What happened? Were you unaware of this potential challenge in White to the virtual presence? And if so, what do you make of it? That's what those collateral attacks are for. This is not the forum where none of this has ever been presented below. Should be
well. If I could interrupt you there a second, Mr. Robinson, it seems you're suggesting then, if there is a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, and there clearly is here, that would best be brought on a PC, right? Is that what you're saying? Instead of here,
correct, Judge. And without acknowledging that there is any merit to such a claim, I would say at best, that's where such a claim should be made, so that the defense attorney would have, as a professional courtesy, at the very least, the opportunity to say, no, I know exactly what I'm doing. I got this guy a great deal. Are you kidding me? Look what he got. These are issues that defense attorneys deal with all the time in interactions with prosecutors.
I had one other, it's not really a question so much as it is as a comment before you're out of time here. I noticed in distribution of harmful material, the state included the phrase to a person believed to be a minor. that language appears in sexual exploitation of a child, but it does not appear in the statute on distribution of harmful material. I'm just curious why, if you know. Because that, it seems odd the state would put that into the count because it's not part of the statute. And if it, I don't know, it seems like to me it may be problematic, but as far as I know, I'll ask this question. It's not raised in this appeal anyway, right?
I don't know, Judge, but I would have an answer for that. Because one of the things as prosecutors that we are keen to do is to ensure that when we file a charging instrument, that we are doing our level best to inform the defendant of not just the charge, but the factual basis for the charge. So because this was what I would refer to as a sting type operation, you would not want the defendant to be led down the path of believing that somehow there was, I see that my time's expired. May I finish very briefly?
Go ahead and finish your answer.
That there may have been another set of facts where there was a 16-year-old girl. So that the two crimes were directed at the same series of events in the same sting operation.
Yeah, I think you might have missed my point, though. This material was not distributed to a minor. Whereas in the sexual exploitation of a child, it only had to be done in the presence or virtual presence of a minor or someone defendant believed to be a minor. So that language is in that statute, whereas it's not in the statute regarding distribution of harmful material. So be it.
All right. Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Peterson, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to begin with Justice Turner's last question. Subsection G of the distribution of harmful material statute does include the phrase he or she believes is a minor, even though the earlier sections don't.
So subsection G?
G as in my first name, Your Honor.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes. So to the degree that these two sections seem to be in conflict with each other, a charging instrument attack on appeal that wasn't brought below, where there is an ambiguity rather than an error, was not something that we thought could carry the day. But I would also like to begin with the state's technological representations, which are categorically false. For one thing, everything that you can do on Facebook Messenger, you can do on Snapchat. The same characteristics are there in white. But to the degree to which Mr. Robinson's children or my students when I was a middle school teacher are instantly answering the phones, and if you call Mr. Robinson or I right now, we would not answer our phones, that's about us, not about the technology that the kids are using that we're not. Facebook Messenger does have a button that you can press that brings you into a Zoom-style live video chat. SMS texting, standard issue text messaging on any Apple phone can take you instantly into FaceTime, which again is a Zoom-like feature. There's no evidence in anywhere in the record, not simply in the state's factual basis, that that happened. It's unclear how it could have happened given the fact that this was a sting operation. And it's also something then we can presume that the state wasn't holding back because of how incriminating that would be. This would not be an issue that anyone could dream of raising if they were video chatting back and forth. That's exactly what White says is virtual presence. But I would like to talk a bit about the idea that not everything has to be in the factual basis. That's absolutely true.
Before you get there, could we just stay with the technology for a minute? So are you saying that there has to be a video component in order to have virtual presence?
I think I am, Your Honor. I think given the fact that virtual presence is meant as an extension of presence, there are other statutes attempted grooming, for instance, where you're doing things by text messages, where you're doing things, frankly, by telegram. This is a statute that grew out of things that you do when you are in the room with either a child or someone you believe to be a child. And to the degree to which traditional, the technology term is SMS, but I don't know what the acronym stands for, but text messaging and Facebook Messenger, these can be handled on the exact same app on a phone. I have multiple friends that have one app that compiles all of their text messages, Facebook messages, Twitter direct messages, Instagram messages into a single app. And when video chat happens, that's when it becomes different. That's when you're seeing the power dynamic of an adult talking to you matters. All of the legislative intent would come into play. But as to this factual basis, the standard of review on appeal is exceedingly friendly to the state. It's if whether there's a basis anywhere in the record. And here, the factual basis isn't the only moment that the state said what evidence it had. There's a preliminary hearing where the officer recites what he did and what happened. There's the factual basis. There's the official state's attorney's statement of the offense after the fact. Not a single one of them says anything other than still photos and text messaging, at least in the sense of messaging by text, by words, as opposed to something more interactive. But I'd last like to, at the same time, address this preservation concern and what Mr. Robinson said about the fundamental institutional important rights that are in play here. The Constitution enshrines a right to effective counsel. And here we have a statement on the record by Ms. Metoyer that she believed both offenses were sex offenses. We have a statement on the record that she believed the factual basis was enough for both. There's not a secret deal here that was struck. Her client ended up on the registry. So we would ask this court to reverse.
Thank you very much, counsel. We'll take this matter under advisement and the court is in recess.